This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue hour number two. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. We were talking about college football in hour number one. And, you know, look, we're in this process of change now where we're going to eventually get to a position where we're going to expand the college football playoff. It doesn't mean the arguments are going to go away. If you're arguing who should be the fourth team out of a group of three or four, you're going to argue who the eighth team should be out of a group of three or four, or the 13th or the 12th team out of a group of three or four. We get down to 16, you'll be doing the same thing. The conversation is going to be different, but it's also going to be the same, because that's what happens when you move down a bit. I don't think you're ever going to have a year in college football, no matter how many college football playoff slots there are, where you're not going to have an open discussion of people as to who the last one in should be. We do it all the time. It doesn't matter. When anything that's subjective that warrants a conversation, we are always going to have arguments as to who deserves whatever is the prize, whatever it is. I can't imagine a time where you would have literally everyone in the country going, well, you know, I mean, there's only really 12 teams that are good in college football, and they just happen to be in this 12-team playoff, or 16. It's not going to be that. You know that. You're going to have some 7-4 team, a 7-5 team that might make a case to get in. Who knows? But you are, but it's kind of part of the process. One thing it's not going to change, and I think it's going to be this way forever and ever, is the Heisman Trophy, in terms of who gets the Heisman Trophy. The Heisman Trophy is going to the strongest offensive player on a major school. Now, you may say, oh, it's always been that case. And that's true. But it always feels like you need to be a team that has a quarterback or a running back or even a wide receiver that is on not only a team that is on the top. And kind of gone are the days where you could have somebody that is playing not on a great team, but on a good enough team that could make some noise. When I was in the mid-80s, there was a player called Joe Dudek, and he played for Plymouth State College. And there's a famous Sports Illustrated cover that said, "What the heck, why not Dudek?" against Chuck Long and even Bo Jackson. That was the Heisman pick for Sports Illustrated that year, a kid at a Plymouth State College. Because there was some sort of romanticism that the sport goes a lot deeper than just the best statistical quarterback on one of the top teams.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue it as Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Let's get your Friday going. Let's get your weekend started. Let's make you feel good. The good of the day.
The good of the day. Changes to the SEC could be coming.
All right.
Yeah. And, I mean, the only reason why I'm bringing them up as the good of the day, because you know what? With any sort of change, people aren't going to like it.
Right.
But it's a change that you would probably see affecting all of college football, because I kind of think the SEC is the trendsetter of college football.
That is kind of the thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the SEC does it, like, eh, maybe we should do it.
So next, or not next year, was it 2024?
2024, yep.
Is when Texas and Oklahoma joined the...
That's the plan.
That's the plan, or at least that, you know, not written in stone just yet, but that's the idea. But when they join, they're going to have 16 teams. Now, there's a proposal out there to create four-team pods. Not really divisions, pods. And that way you can keep traditional rivalries and stuff like that. But Greg Sankey has a different idea. And he's kind of looking at it from this standpoint of what's going on this season. He doesn't want any divisions. He just wants one straight up and down 16 team division.
Yeah, and I what is the thought process behind
that? I think the thought process, or what's kind of motivating him, is that regardless of what happens over the next 2 weeks, it's going to be Georgia versus LSU, despite the fact that Tennessee throttled LSU.
Right. So what he's saying is,
and so going into the SEC Conference Championship, it should be a rematch between Georgia and Tennessee.
That's exactly how the Pac-12 does it, with not as many teams.
Right.
Right. So the Big 12 does it the same way. There's no divisions. So there's no division winner, so you don't have a limping team coming in. USC is going to play Oregon. That's it. They're the top two teams in the conference. They are playing against each other. The ACC still does divisions, but I think they're moving away from that too. Because, again, you can have one team that's outstanding, nationally ranked, unbeaten, or whatnot, but their opponent could come from a division where there's some attrition that ate each other up, and all of a sudden you're not getting that level quality opponent in the title game. And I think that's where Greg Sankey is seeing the flaw. In Greg Sankey's world, he would love to see Tennessee in the SEC title game this week, next week, a couple weeks against Georgia, and win that game.
Yeah.
And force the committee with two one-loss teams to get both of them in the playoff. Yeah, that's a smart way to do it. I think the four-pod thing is silly if it doesn't have any meat on the other end of it.
Well, I mean, the only idea I came up with then is like, okay, you're going to have semifinals leading to a finals?
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. Like, what's the point in having a division if the division does, in the end, the division won't mean anything? So, like, you can divide people up any way you want. You can divide, you know, divisions. But if you say, look, we have these divisions, but just because you win your division doesn't mean you're going to play for the SEC championship. We're just going to take the two best teams. Well, then what's the point in having a division? Right? Like the purpose of having a division is something to win. Right. And that's kind of the thing. But I absolutely know where he's coming from.
I mean, yeah. And I feel like during like the early 2000s into the 2010s, when Nick Saban first took over Alabama, the two best teams were always out of the West.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the East was kind of just dragging along. So it was like, you know, all of a sudden you had, well, we got a West team and we have to have an East team because that's the way it is.
Yeah. Outside of like Florida. That was, right. You know, there wasn't. I mean, I remember arguing with one of my SEC friends, coworker of mine, and I said, look, we both love the SEC. We both went to SEC schools. He loves Alabama. He loved Alabama. And I said, but we have a hubris about us because Missouri and Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M made an impact the second they got there. Like, Missouri joined the conference. They were playing in the SEC title game.
Yeah.
A couple of times. And Johnny Manziel won the Heisman Trophy. So, like, there is a sense of like, it's not only better here, it's like exponentially better here. And the Greg Sankey is trying to he wants to remind the rest of the college football world that's the case, but he can't do it because Tennessee has to sit on the bench on the third. Like they can't play. So he wants them to play. And that makes sense. It makes sense. Because if LSU wins the SEC championship game, there's no guarantee that they're going to go as a two-loss team. But Georgia is.
Right.
Like, if Georgia closes out, wins the rest of their games where they should. They got Kentucky this weekend in Lexington. They got Georgia Tech. And if they lose to LSU, it doesn't matter. If they go in undefeated on the third to Atlanta, they're getting in no matter what. But he's like, boy, I want a situation where I get two in. That of course I do.
So and he knows that it's, you know, I mean, even though there's an outside chance, like, you know, we're looking at it going, well, there's a possibility if this happens, if this happens, that you can get three SEC teams in there. It's not going to happen. I mean, the committee still is going to be like, we can't do that.
I'm telling you, you're right. That's the whole thing. Like, if you just threw it into a computer, and the computer might spit out that combination, but human beings are not going to spit out that combination.
No, not at all.
They will tear that committee
and we're back to BCS days.
They're going to start all over again if that ever happened. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Oh, no, we're at the bad.
Oh, the bad, I'm sorry.
The bad of the day. You ready? Sitting down?
Yes.
Details of Brittany Griner's new prisons.
Oh boy,
are out and they sound horrific.
Oh boy.
So apparently, she has been moved to a penal colony in the Russian region of Mordovia, which is about 300 miles south of Moscow. No official word that this is where she has been moved. This is just what kind of like her lawyers, I guess, have been told through back channel communication type of deals that that's where she's moving. And this penal colony is known as described as a rat infested sweatshop.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, my God.
Prisoners there have lost fingers, Tony, due to long hours of forced labor at sewing machines. They usually will work 12 to 16 hours per day, just given lunch breaks and bathroom breaks. And if they do not fill their quotas, they are beaten.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is a reminder to everyone out there. Russia is different than us. Like, if we had that going on in the United States, I mean, that prison would be shut down in a second.
I know. It would be so – there would be so many lawsuits.
Oh, my God.
It would just be not even – you wouldn't even be able to fight the battle of trying to keep a place like that open. Unbelievable. Like I'm – okay, outside of, like, I don't know, Ray Carruth, right? Like where somebody, like, committed murder or something. Just take that. But I'm talking, like, innocent mistake. Is this the worst mistake an athlete has ever made?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Like, again, like, outside of killing somebody, like, she packed cannabis oil in her suitcase and is now sewing garments for the next 9 years for 16 hours a day in a rat-infested prison.
Right. And if she doesn't meet her quota that day, she will be beaten.
Yeah.
And you know, like they said, I mean, you know, it's like, because it works so hard and so much that, you know, some prisoners have lost their fingers. I can't even imagine what that would be like.
I know she went before the war. I know she went before. She was going over there before he invaded Ukraine, because early February. But did she have anybody in her camp that said, you know, don't go over there this year? Just don't. I'm just hearing things. There's rumors. There's all sorts of unrest. Stay home. Just stay home. Because this one decision, that's it. It's over. It's over. Like, she's – and you know what's sad? What is psychologically – what is she going to be when she does – if she does get home? Like, let's say she's there for 2 years doing this.
Yeah.
Like, because these things take forever. That is the one lesson I think a lot of people learned about this. They're like, well, Joe Biden should just call and get her. No, it doesn't work that way.
Nope.
It does not work that way. And they don't even have to tell you where she is. Like that, like you just said, her lawyer is hearing it through back channels.
Yeah.
Like, people are, it's like, not, I think I got it. I'm going to tell you. I think
it's,
I know,
not the Moscow government going like, hey,
yeah,
guys, by the way, we moved Brittany Griner to this cell.
We don't even know
prison.
Where she is. We're not 100% sure where she is. This is how people disappear in these systems. And you forget about them as a country. I'm serious. That's
yeah.
Like, I know you can disagree with her politics and stuff, but just the idea of, like, that one decision to pack cannabis oil without understanding where she was going.
And it wasn't even that much either. I mean, you know, like, people always say, it's like, that wouldn't even be a misdemeanor in the United States. And it's like, well, again, it's not the United States.
Again, it's not all of these things. Like, it's, I know it's hard to do. It's like when you're born to wealth, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, your parents are billionaires and you never want for anything. And it's like, you know, you've taken private jets wherever you go, and you just cannot for the life of you understand somebody that is complaining about sitting, you know, somebody's complaining about something, about working. You just, there's nothing to relate to, right? Like, there's nothing, you can't relate to it. We just cannot relate to the idea that they don't have to do anything. Because we live in a system where that wouldn't happen. If your relative was taken into custody and was arrested for something, and they said, "All right, I'm guilty," and then the answer to the parents or family, friends, whatever, was, "We've taken Junior, and you will never know where he is. We're not telling you where he is." We'd be like, "Well, I'm on the phone with my lawyer tomorrow. We're going to file this, and we're going to file that, and we're going to go through this process. Because that's the life we live. And then when we think of 16 hours a day sewing garments together for nothing and in a rat-infested prison, we'd go,
well, she does. They do earn a little bit of money. They earn a little bit of money, but it works out
to be... But it's like jail money?
Like, it's like 100 rubles split between 20 people.
Oh, I got you. Buy toothpaste.
Yeah, I don't even know how much a ruble is worth.
We are not connected to this idea. And the other thing too, I know we got to get to the dumb. The other thing too, always remember this. It goes back to that 90s, that kid that got caned, right?
Yep.
The other thing the government has to do over there, and it doesn't matter where you are, is they have to protect their own rule.
Yeah.
Right? That kid got caned for the graffiti, right? Because that's the punishment over there. And if they had let him go and said, yeah, you know what, he can go home, the people of that country would have been, wait, why? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? Why did my son get caned? Why did my relative get caned? Why was he thrown in prison? Why was he taken to a sweatshop? Why? All of those things, they just don't let them go because they feel nice. They have to look at their own citizens and go, this is what we've decided. No, she, you know, so there's a lot of politics at play, and there's a lot of things I don't think people are grasping. But yeah. All right, we got to get to the dumb of the day.
Let's carry it over.
Okay, let's carry that over because it's a deeper one.
Yeah, well, there's
you know, several. I like the deeper stuff.
It's several of them, and it all has to deal with Cutter.
All right, let's do that when we come back. The dumb, and it involves the World Cup, which starts, this weekend?
Is it Sunday.
Sunday. Sunday.
you're going to love what I'm going to talk about.
Can't wait for this. Can't wait for this when we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb because we got a lot of dumb to get to from the World Cup that starts Sunday in Qatar. All right, so let's get it. What is the dumb of the day?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you because there's two stories coming out of Qatar, right?
Oh, boy.
You want to talk about beer or match fixing?
Why don't we do both? Let's start with beer. Yeah, match fixing. Can't wait to get to that one.
So,
oh, boy.
So the beer controversy, we've talked about it before that, you know, first Qatar was going to ban beer sales completely. Then they decided, no, you know, we'll have beer. We'll just have beer tents. And then they said, well, you know, the beer tents a little too visible. You got to put them in like the back alley. We don't want them. You know, we really don't want the public to see the beer tents. And now Qatar is, you know, 3 days away from the start of the World Cup. And they're like, no, you know, we're going to ban beer altogether.
There's never, ever been any part of this at all.
And oh, that is a breach of contract with Budweiser or FIFA. FIFA is in a breach of contract with Budweiser, to which Qatar probably is like, I don't care. Here's a billion.
Where are you going to go? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
So it looks like it's going to be more and more a dry World Cup.
I am watching that that FIFA documentary on Netflix, and it is unbelievably fascinating. It is crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
How all broke and how it went down. So the part about the Qatar getting the World Cup, there was one woman. She was part of the Qatar 2022 campaign back in 2009. She got kicked out of the country. When she got kicked out of the country, she started speaking about what they did, and she was like, all we did was we just promised – money to these people's football federations, right? We said, oh, we'll give you $1 million or $1.5 million, your football federations. But I have a question, like this kind of thing, like when you, like, so if you're FIFA, and again, bribery changes everything, right? But do they not sit down and go, hey, you know what? We've got multi-million-dollar sponsorships here that, and we need to make sure that you're a country that would allow these products to be utilized. Just curious.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's absolutely insane. Oh, my goodness.
It's just one thing. You know, it's weird, though, because it's always just one story after another coming out of this place.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to think. And you're going to love the match-fixing one. So the game kicks off Sunday. Traditionally, in every World Cup, the home team plays the first match.
Right.
Right? Okay. That's how it's been for years and years and years. And that usually is the only match of that day. And that's the case here. Qatar will play Ecuador. It's the only match come Sunday. Then the World Cup really kicks into gear starting Monday. Qatar is not known as a soccer powerhouse country.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware of that. Yeah, when I ask if they're good, I don't mean like Germany good, but are they decent?
Like, I really have no idea. I would think, this is me personally, like if Brazil was to play Qatar, the final score would probably be somewhere like around 5-0, 6-0 type of thing, right? But they are not playing Brazil. They are playing Ecuador. Now, Ecuador is not a huge powerhouse South American country, but they are a good soccer country. It's one, you know, it's obviously their main sport. Apparently, some of the Qatari officials or sheiks, if you will, the royal family, whoever's in charge of Qatar, have paid 8 Ecuadorian players a little under $8 million to throw the first game.
Oh, see, there's no scruples here. I don't even know what to say.
Now,
oh,
it's not 100% confirmed. It's 5 Qatari and Ecuador insiders have talked about this. You know, so you still hope that the story is false. But at the same time, It wouldn't surprise me. And that's the larger issue here. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these teams are like, oh, you know what? I'm making $8 million, which is more for one game, which is more than I make in a year. Why wouldn't I? I don't know.
Ugh.
So, yeah. Because, I mean, the other thing, too, is that in the World Cup, it's when South Africa hosted, they were the first one not to do this. But usually the host country makes it out of the group stage and into the knockout round. And South Africa was the first one not to do it. No one is expecting Qatar to be, you know, part of that.
Is there a built-in advantage at being at home? Like, do you get put in an easier group? Like, do you get to pick up groups? Like, is there something that says that trend can? I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we get to play at home.
The advantage to it is this, right? When they're seeding the pots, when they're seeding the groups, they go into the pot with the top-ranked teams.
Okay.
Because, you know, we know that they're going to go into Group A. It's always they go into Group A. But they won't play in group stage. They're not going to play Brazil, Argentina, England, Germany. It's impossible for them to play them because they're all coming from one pot. So then it is kind of easier because then if you do get a European team, you're getting like a lower-tier European team.
I got it.
They didn't really get a lower-tier European team this time around because I think they're playing the Netherlands are in their group. So all you got to do is finish top two. And,
right.
You know, and so
there isn't a, well, the home team gets its choice or the home team there's nothing like set in stone that says we give the home team this little advantage. It just worked out that way that the home teams.
Right. The advantage is that they're not getting a huge powerhouse team.
Got it.
You know, a lot of groups, you know, a lot of times you'll get like a huge powerhouse team and then you're getting the second team. It's still a really, really good team. So it makes it kind of, you're like looking at those two teams are going to move on.
So in this FIFA documentary, this woman that left and she reported all of this like payments, right? The thing that sprung open this whole thing, they had the guy from Qatar that was in charge of, like, he was the lead guy on the team that was making the pitch, whatever his job was. And even for this documentary, he sits down for this documentary and he goes, everything she said is false. Everything she's, and it's like, it's the most unbelievable statement I've ever, like there is, like, I know he can't admit on camera, like, yeah, we did, but he's like, everything she said is false. As if to try to convince the world that this country got this little tiny country with no infrastructure for soccer, was going to have to build everything from scratch. This little country that did not have enough hotel rooms, that did not have stadiums, beat out the rest of the people, rest of the countries that
recruited people from other countries,
right,
to build their stadiums.
He's just like, it came through the goodness of our pitch. Like that,
yeah.
Like we sold it correctly. Like we said,
well, that was the rumor too, that Sepp Blatter, who was the president of FIFA, his dream was under his reign for a World Cup to be hosted in every one of the regions.
Right.
You know, minus Antarctica, obviously. But, you know, and so it is. You know, I mean, he brought the World Cup to Africa for the first time ever. Now he's bringing it to the Middle East for the first time ever.
Like, imagine if you went to the Academy Awards in the 90s and they were like, up for Best Actor, Jack Nicholson, Michael Douglas, Leonardo DiCaprio, Pauly Shore.
Right.
And then they went, and the winner is Pauly Shore. Wouldn't you say, I think something's not quite right there. Encino Man was a good movie, but I'm not 100% sure that was something that was better than what Jack Nicholas produced on screen. Like, when he went up there and he was like, Qatar! Like, there must have been people going,
wait, what?
What? And then just the first thought, oh, Jesus, they bought it. They bought this. Not one person went, oh, my God, their pitch worked. They were successful
no.
in selling their
no,
country
because it
over the United States of America.
Because when Qatar won, it immediately went to, what's it called, the FIFA scandal.
Yeah,
where
right.
all the top guys were arrested. Like, they showed up to
yes.
work one day in Switzerland, and it was like, nope, you come with me, you come with me, you come with me. Here,
unbelievable. This, well, what did we say earlier? Let's just get to the soccer.
Let's just get to the soccer. Sports washing, let it begin. We'll be right back.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, before we get back to the NFL, one quick question on the World Cup.
Yeah.
Because this thought sprung into my head. So when Sepp Blatter said Qatar, right? I know I've used this in before, but do you remember the Milli Vanilli VH1 Behind the Music?
Yep.
So there's that famous scene in that where Milli Vanilli are going around and they're lip syncing and their sensations, but one of them goes, "We can't win the Grammy." That's the thing, because they went to the Grammy Awards praying they wouldn't win the Grammy, because they said, he goes, "We knew if we won the Grammy, the clock's ticking." Right? Do you think anybody felt that way? Do you think there's anybody in FIFA going, the moment he pulls that envelope?
I don't think in FIFA.
We're in trouble.
But I'm going to say,
of all the people, that goes, well, how many votes? 24 votes? There were 24 people that vote for that?
Yeah, I think
around that? Do you think any one of them went, the moment he says Qatar, we are all in trouble?
I'm not thinking FIFA, but I would love to imagine, because I think the equivalent is more with the Qatar World Cup of crew.
Yeah.
That there was somebody there, who was part of that crew to try to get the World Cup there, that went, all right, we've done all this stuff. We made a name for ourselves. We're the final two, but we can't get the World Cup.
Right, right.
I want to believe it's more someone in the Qatar regime.
There was one guy, I forget what maybe, but he said they did not understand the amount of scrutiny and now deep reporting that was going to come from that decision. Like, people, they thought that, oh yeah, Qatar won. All right, let's move on.
That makes sense.
But they said as soon, they were like, okay, let's find out how this happened. And they started doing the digging. And
I mean, I'm surprised that it never moved away from there,
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know what it is, because, I mean, once the bribery scandal went down, I mean, some of these court cases are still going in. Jack Warner, who was in charge of CONCACAF, which is our region, United States, Canada, Central America, Mexico. Yeah, that's the region we belong to. Jack Warner was the head of CONCACAF, and he admitted to taking bribes, or not admitted, but knowingly took bribes. Everyone, there's enough documentation that he knows it took bribes. He's been hiding in Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, God. Because,
because that's where he's from, and he's just been hanging out there, living a good life. And it was just ruled, I think, either last week or the week before, that he has to stand trial now.
Oh, okay.
Because, Trinidad and Tobago isn't one of those countries that's like, oh, no, you can hide out here forever. We won't extradite you. And Trinidad's like, nope, you got to go, bud.
Yeah, that's got to.
So he's going to stand trial in the United States, because I think a lot of the lawsuits came from the United States. Because
so nuts.
We sat here going, well, how did this happen?
So crazy.
But, yeah, that's why I don't think it was anyone in FIFA saying we can't, because, well, I guess.
You know what the problem is in the large, and I give the New York Times credit and HBO credit, right? Their problem is that when you talk about all of these stadiums that were built with the slave labor and all, there's nobody that you can hold accountable for it. Like, the country is just going to, the world's going to come, the world's going to leave. And that's it. No one's going to jail for that. No one's going to.
No.
There's no justice that's going to be served from the thousands of Nepal citizens that were brought over to. Like, a lot of those, they didn't enslave people to do it. They took advantage of incredible, incredible poverty, of people's desire to help their families, mm-hmm. and said, oh, yeah, when you get here, you're going to live in squalor and you're going to work building these stadiums in the searing heat. But because of desperation, they were looking around going, who's desperate? What country is desperate enough with strong young men that would come over here for pennies to build stadiums? And that's what they did. But no one's going to hold them accountable for that. No one's going to say, oh, because of that, you're now not part of the global community anymore. And so there's nothing. You can expose it, but what is the end result of that? Like you can expose it, and I give everybody credit who exposed it, but then what do we do with it? Right?
Right.
There's nothing we can do with it.
No, because what are we going to do? Throw a sheik in jail?
Right. Right, because but the bribery scandal is completely different because you can go, I wonder if there's something to this. And he's a reporter, you dig, and then other reporters dig, and then next thing you know, people are getting arrested in their apartment in Zurich. And now all of a sudden you're like, okay, there's an answer for this. Somebody paid for this.
My favorite was the people just showing up for work.
Yeah.
opening up their office and there's agents there like, let's go, bud.
Let's go. Oh, my God.
You just think it's a normal day.
Yeah. Like, what would be the America? Would America have the same reaction if the – imagine if, like, Roger Goodell went, and the Super Bowl's going to Portland, Maine. And you're like, what?
Wait, huh?
Huh? And they're like, they don't even have a state. Doesn't matter. They'll have one by the
time.
Super Bowl 60, Portland, Maine.
Okay.
And you're like, right, wait. And then somebody dug into that and they found out that Portland, Maine.
All right, but haven't we've done that?
Like in the NFL?
The NFL awarded LA last year's Super Bowl before, on the assumption that it was going to be built in time. And it was.
But I'm just saying, was it bribery? Like, it was like I'm talking about a non-NFL.
Yeah, non-NFL.
Can't host it. Like, Qatar has no business being here. Like, I swear. I hate to say this, but if the United, let's say the United States was awarded this World Cup. Imagine instead of Qatar, you said the United States. Would anybody have gone, gee, I wonder how the United States got that? And they would probably go, well, you know what? It's a big country. They got a lot of stadiums. They got a lot of money.
Yep.
It's a good place to have it. Even if the truth was, if the United States had bribed their way into that, nobody would go, all right, let me do some digging. Right? They would have just assumed the United States won it on merit.
Yep.
This was so out of left field that it warranted people's scrutiny.
I mean, there was a lot of belief that Russia bribed their way to it, too, and I believe that they did.
Probably.
But it wasn't outrageous to think Russia
It goes back to my Portland, Maine example. Like, if Roger Goodell went, Portland, Maine is going to have the Super Bowl, they'll have a stadium built for it.
Yeah.
We would go, wait, who in Portland is rich? Is Stephen King living there? Like, what is going on? How much are they paying the NFL to have the Super Bowl in Portland, Maine?
Let's talk about hotels for a second,
right,
shall we?
Right, is there enough hotels in Portland, Maine to house everybody that's coming?
Because we don't want another Jacksonville situation where we are bringing cruise ships.
Yeah, we ain't going to Jacksonville again for the Super Bowl. But that's the same thing. It's like this country is like, the biggest event in the world, we got it. And everybody thought they won a fair fight. God, it's funny. So hilarious. Nevertheless. Yeah, I know. Thank God
But I mean, it's just all the little things, too, because remember, the cutter was like, oh, no, yeah. No, we can have it during the summertime, but it's 130 degrees in the shade there. Oh, yeah, but we're going to have new technology where the field will be air conditioned.
Yeah, they were going to make clouds, artificial clouds that hovered over the stadium.
And the field itself, you wouldn't feel the searing heat on the field. It was going to be a good 75, 78 degrees on the field.
So crazy.
So the players, they wouldn't know any difference. It's like they're going to use coolant from underneath the grass, and it was going to radiate up. And it was like, well, cool air doesn't radiate up.
on the reverse side, like if you flipped it with the NFL, that's what they do with NFL teams all the time. Like, we're seeing that in Nashville. There's a real debate about how much public money needs to go to this new stadium. And the big thing that's on the pro stadium side is Super Bowl. That's exactly the way the NFL wanted it. That's exactly what they want. They want you to go, how much money on the public side? And the other side go, Super Bowl. And the other side is supposed to go, oh, I'm sorry, you said Super Bowl. I meant money. I guess, yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad. It doesn't matter how much it costs, right? It doesn't matter how much you need money roads and schools.
You can look at it.
Just dump it into a new stadium. The NFL's done that forever.
You can look at it in the reverse way, too, because, I mean, everything was fine in San Diego until the NFL said, you know what, that stadium needs to be redone or you guys need to do something else. Because we are no longer bringing the Super Bowl there, and that gave Spanos family the gumption of saying, "Hey guys, hey, we need a new stadium." NFL said so.
Super Bowl 48 was held in New Jersey,
right,
in the wintertime, because they used it as a method of getting that stadium built. Have we gone to a cold weather outdoor stadium yet? Have we done an outdoor winter game for the Super Bowl since then? No, we have not. They have gone to Cleveland. They have not gone to Pittsburgh. I doubt they'll go to Buffalo when Buffalo gets that thing built. We haven't gone to Gillette Stadium. We haven't
Seattle. Seattle won't even get it.
Seattle's not even getting it. So they're not going to Denver. right? They will when you have a thing on the agenda of a sit like this. I'm telling you, there's like a legit. I think the stadium here in Nashville is going to pass. Like all the right politicians are arguing. But every day there's somebody on the radio going, I don't think this is a good idea. Our schools are falling apart. And they're like, yeah, well, Super Bowl. Sorry, just tell your kid Super Bowl. When he's like, why doesn't this window close tight? Super Bowl. And he goes, oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's fine. It's not even cooled or heated properly. Yeah. Super Bowl.
No, that's why you have these cold weather places. Like Detroit will host the Super Bowl once they, sure. You know, kind of build up the outside of Detroit
once
around
you
the
put a
field.
Cover over the stadium.
You know, but like Chicago won't. That's why I think there's talks of building a new stadium in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, away from Soldier Field and not making it open roof, making it retractable.
Why? Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
We do it all the time. That's the world of this is the crazy.
Chicago's never hosted a Super Bowl. Wouldn't it be great to have a Super Bowl in Chicago?
I remember. Oh, man. I remember that before that Super Bowl 48, that's the one Denver played Seattle. My friends in Denver were like, oh, God. Some of my friends were like, it's winter in Denver, and I wanted to go to Phoenix, or I wanted to go to Miami, and instead I'm going to New Jersey.
Yeah.
Like in the freezing New England weather.
That Super Bowl committee was sweating bullets, weren't they?
Oh, no doubt. They were
the
like
entire time. Like just checking the weather every 5 minutes for like months straight.
Because people said they would have loved to see it. I don't know if it would have been fine for a certain group, but the larger people that watch the Super Bowl, would they like I can barely see this thing on TV? Yeah.
Hey, people complained about Minnesota.
Right.
And that was everything was held indoors. In fact, there's an underground tunnel. You don't even have to go,
outside.
But right? Yet people were still complaining about it. It's like, it's so cold here.
Exactly. Like you just can take
but
the tunnels.
You know what? I bet it'll go back to Minnesota.
Sure.
At some point.
Beautiful stadium.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful stadium. All right. As Wake Up Call continues on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Hour three, we've got our football schedule to go over to give you the good and the bad of those games. Plus, Eric at home will join us from NFL Network, and we will talk to him. NFL.com. We'll talk to him about where the season is going, including last night's big win by the Titans. Now they've won 7 of 8. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so I've been saying this morning about last night's game. I mean, I thought it could have been a really good game, and it was. I mean, it was a one-score game. I thought Tennessee pushed Green Bay around a lot. Green Bay wasn't able to run the football. I think they were averaging less than 3 yards per carry. Aaron Rodgers never really got in any rhythm. But I think this was a good win for Tennessee. I don't say big because I don't think Tennessee is in a position other than going for, you know, home field advantage and fighting, you know, the Bills and the Chiefs and the Ravens for that position. They're right now comfortably enough in their division. If Jeff Saturday turns this thing around, God bless him. But there's a comfort level that they've got within their own division. But they're a very good team. But the problem is they're not different, and that's my biggest question, is they're not really different. Personnel may be a little different, but overall their philosophy is Derrick Henry, and I think last night was an eye-opener that if they can throw, they can throw. And I think that's always been the mark on Tennessee, is that, you know, I hear this a lot with Ryan Tannehill, especially being here in Nashville. There's always been a real conversation about Ryan Tannehill. Like, in the end, if he needs to throw it 320 yards or 350 yards, can the offense do that? And last night, he could. He was 22 of 27. He was very, very efficient last night and had a number of good throws downfield. That wasn't just yards after the catch on that 330. There was a lot of good passes that he threw on target to Treylon Burks. Derrick Henry was effective in the run game and keeping everything honest. He didn't break out for 150 yards or anything like that. He didn't have a big 60-yard touchdown run or anything like that. He had 87 really hard-fought, grounded-out yards on 28 carries. I mean, that's about 3 yards a carry. But Ryan Tannehill was able to move the team down the field, and I never felt like Tennessee was threatening. Okay, so what does that mean? So Tennessee sits at 7-3. Right now, they are keeping pace with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. Those are two teams they lost to. So if the Titans are going to win home field advantage, those were games last year that they won. They beat Kansas City convincingly early last year when the Chiefs were kind of, they're kind of going back and forth a little bit. But then they beat Buffalo in Nashville where Josh Allen slipped on fourth down. So they had the game in hand on both of those teams. They do not have the game in hand on either one of them. But they are keeping pace in terms of wins. This is a team that has not only found its groove, but you could almost dismiss the first two games of the season. Now, you can in a way because one of those losses was to Buffalo, and that could come back to bite them when we sort this stuff out for the playoffs. But the reality of it is since they played the Raiders at 0-2 all the way through last night, they've won 7 of 8 games, and the only loss was an overtime setback to Kansas City when Malik Willis was the quarterback. That says a lot about where this team is going. Look, in the end, the purpose, like we love style points and we love how a team looks, right? We're justified in doing that. There are some teams. I remember the year the Steelers went 11-0, and I was never comfortable with them that year. I was never like, this is one of the best teams in NFL history, right? Every time they would win a game, I'm like, how in God's name did they win? They didn't look like the dominating teams that had gone 10-0, 9-0, you know, to start the season. So you are what your record is in an extent, but the Titans are not getting away from who they are, but they're adding enough to make me think like that added enough is they're going to be a scary team late in the season and maybe into the playoffs. They've disappointed us with their opening games in 2020 and 2021, but they might have something now as Tannehill is willing to air it out a little bit, and they're getting really tricked up in terms of their play calling.